never gotta listen. I'm never quitting on my mission. I'ma roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going, better go in the right direction. In the moment you stressing, but you gon' be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains, haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, let's camera action, I'm ready to
You're
go.
Listening to the Tom Ficklin Show on WNHH LP 103.5 FM, your home for community radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Tom Ficklin Show. My name is Gary Tinney, and first and foremost, I would like to thank Tom Ficklin and crew and our guests for allowing us to share our views today pertaining to race and gender, systemic racism and gender in the fire service. I would like to introduce our guests. Our guests consist of Terry Edward Clements, president of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters out of Flint, Michigan. Brenda Brooks, our Southeast Region Director of the International. Paul Washington, I'm not sure if he's signed out on New York. And Mr. James Rawlins, our elder and staunch supporter of our efforts as we work through our community to help our youth maneuver through their education and beyond. So again, thank you guys for taking your day and helping us this morning. So if you don't mind, if you can introduce yourself.
Hello, I am Carrie Edwards Clemens, president of the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters, elected in 2020. I am a 22-year veteran of the City of Flint Fire Department, current deputy fire chief, first female elected position in our city, also the first female elected president of the International. I am glad and thankful for inviting me.
And Director Brooks.
Good morning. Welcome from Orlando, Florida, sunny day. My name is Brenda Brooks. I am the Southeast Regional Director, which covers 9 states plus the District of Columbia. I have been a member of the International for 37 years. I'm retired gladly from Orange County Fire Rescue in Orlando, Florida. I am here for any questions that I can answer or any input that I can put in.
Good morning. My name is James Rawlings. I am here at the beck and call of Frederick Douglass, i.e. Gary Tinney. I have been involved with Gary for a couple of decades as our leader on this issue. I spent 8 years as the president of the Greater New Haven branch of the NAACP. I'm not here in that capacity here today. I'm simply still a member of the NAACP and on the state NAACP. But the issue of racism and the challenges we have when I look at the city of New Haven as in other urban areas, and I relate the amount of thefts we have of black men and black females to the lack of access to these wonderful opportunities, I remain concerned as an elder.
Thank you. So first, I'm going to start with Madam President. Please give us a brief history of the organization and the existence of Blacks in the Fire Service.
So our organization was established in 1970. Was on the cusp of the civil rights movement. And so we had going on at the time, 1950s and 60s, were the rise of the KKK and a lot of controversy and things going on in our community, our nation. And so leading up to the death of Dr. King in 1968. And so our organization was founded, our founder, David Floyd. And what happened was that during that time, there were not a lot of minorities in the fire department. And due to the unrest, the civil unrest in our community kind of looked like what we've seen in 2021. They decided that they were going to do a mass recruitment of firefighters in the fire service. It's not because they wanted us there. They was trying to calm the situation. We were African-Americans were unhappy There was police brutality, and we were a lot of people were starting fires. The fire department couldn't get in. We were setting traps, and so the IAFF and the government at the time decided they were going to recruit minorities in the fire service to calm this. Our organization was started out of that, out of what was going on at the time. Blacks were being recruited. It wasn't a true effort into the fire service, and they were brought into the fire service and they were mistreated. They were secluded. They were separate. There was no separate but equal. And they were brought in and mistreated. It was not a true recruitment because they really didn't want us there. They was trying to calm the situation at the time. And so our organization was founded to provide recruitment into the fire service, upward mobility when you get there, and just an avenue to provide fire prevention and education activities in the Black community, which the white firefighters were not going into the Black community. It was still a good old boy network, and it still exists today. So don't think that it has stopped because we're here. And so it was a good old boy network. With the rise of the KKK, they were in the fire service. They were running the fire service. If you think about the pictures that we have seen of the fire department at the time, all we saw was firefighters with their hose on our people. That's what we saw. That's what was happening. They took it upon themselves to include themselves in this civil unrest in that way. And we're talking 120 pounds of pressure at least on our people and a lot of our children and women. And so when you talk about recruitment to the fire service, that's what we saw firefighters. It wasn't a pleasant experience when we viewed firefighters. And so our organization was founded to address the unrest, also what was going on in the fire service with African Americans. Because I continue to say the fire department is a well-kept secret. A lot of people don't know. They don't talk about it because it's their father, their father's fathers, their uncle. Oh, you're going to marry my daughter, so I'm going to get you in the fire service. It was always that type of environment. And so our organization was founded to address those issues of minority recruitment, Blacks in the fire service, and the issues that we were going on, fire prevention and education to our community. And so that's what we continue on today.
Thank you, Madam President. Just briefly, if you could speak a little bit about what the organization does pertaining to scholarships and community outreach and training and preparing our youth for these career paths.
So thank you for asking. So our organization offer a variety of educational opportunities for minorities. And so we have EMT scholarships to send individuals to EMT school. We have training and upward mobility, have just access to educational opportunities, not necessarily within the fire service. So we partner with Columbia Southern and Waldorf College to provide scholarships to our membership and our families. And so not only that, we have chapters across the country that provide fire prevention and education activities within communities of color. And so we have received grants to provide second story escape ladders, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, and we utilize our chapters to go into our communities and provide the fire safety equipment for free. And so we have a lot of things going on where we try to support our communities because that's what our organization is all about, community service and providing those safety initiatives to help our communities. We have the chapters. I always say that they are our legs. They are our boots on the ground. We can affect change by having all these chapters on the ground, providing these opportunities for our communities. So not only SCED education, but fire training and recruitment.
Director Brooks, please identify gender and race issues that you've faced throughout your career and issues pertaining to women as they continue to issues that they continue to face in the fire service.
Thank you, Gary, for asking that. I was not actually a firefighter. I was an administrator that was putting out the fires in the field for our people. That's where I came in to the organization. I had no idea about the racism in the fire service until I became part of the administration. I'm from the era of the hose. I was born and raised in New Orleans, so I didn't actually have that part of it, but I had family members in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia that was actually dealing with that. So when I came into the fire service, I was struck by the fact that the limited number of people that looked like me that was actually hired, and those that was hired, they were fearful. During that time, 35 years ago, they did a lot of in-house pranks, they called it. We called it harassment. And that was to try to intimidate them, to get them to leave. They left out a lot of information as far as education. And at one time, I was in a meeting when they asked the question that did they lower the standards for African-Americans and women. And I was struck by that because I put in the time to work with the state fire marshal's office and the state fire academy to increase it, because we had educated our members to get more education. In the Southeast region, we offer several upper mobility classes, assessment centers especially, so that they will be prepared to move in this direction. Gary, the problem we're facing now is that we're having very few females that's coming in the fire service. In the beginning, we were pretty good about recruiting, but for some reason now, they're not here. In Orange County, we had 37 black females. We have two now, only two. Now, from what I understand, they are recruiting, and they've asked me to come in, and I've actually assigned the local chapter here because I'm not going to do that. But I will say that we have a lot of work to do. Back in the 70s, 50 years ago, like President Clemens says, we were moving in a positive direction. Lawsuits were being filed. They were mandating that they be hired. Gary, right now, it's worse than it was then, because they've learned how to manipulate the system. They're hiring people that's going to last 20, 25 years in those positions and not move any further. So the fight is just not over. And I'm hoping the next generation will continue the fight, because as I see it right now, it's scary. We don't want it to look like it did in 1970. We need it to look more like the communities that we live in now.
Thank you, Director Brooks. Madam President, I would like to speak specifically to, there's an issue that we continue to run into across the country, and that's retention, especially in the academies, especially pertaining to African-American women. It's something that I've seen over the years that has reared its ugly head and eliminated and ruined lives. When you take someone that has given up their career and go into the academy thinking that the academy is just going to train them, so they're employed. They're confident that they're employed by the city. And then they find out that at the last minute, they've been eliminated. And I find this to be heart-wrenching because, again, you have single mothers who are losing their livelihood and their ability to educate and raise their children is a problem in itself. So if you could speak to that, I'd appreciate
it. So as Director Brooks said, racism hasn't gone. They figured out how to do it secretly. And so now they require fire one and two. And in my community, we don't offer that. A lot of volunteer fire departments offer it. And so then we finally get where we got someone coming into the fire service. And instead of my trainer, I'll tell you about my story. My trainer, when I hired into the fire department, he came to me, walked on the side, and he said, if you listen, I'll tell you how to do it. And I'll tell you how to get it done as a female. He said, I don't want you to do it that way. I need you to think through it. And I'm going to help you get through it. He was an African-American. And so he didn't he didn't come down on me because I don't have the upper body strength that the males had. He said, I'm going to teach you how to do this job because you can do it. We have trainers now that don't look like us. He was an enigma. He was just a special person. And so they get us into the training academy and they put us through all these evolutions. Then I have experience where you take me all day, 4 hours, doing practical examinations. And then we get to the last 30 mm-hmm. minutes of the day and you make me do it again, knowing that I'm exhausted. Then during that time, you take out your camera because you're trying to stack up evidence that I shouldn't be there. So they take out their camera and they start filming. Now, mind you, the fire chief is not there. No one's there. It's the training officer in the class. They know how much you've been through for those 4 hours of evolution. Now, all of a sudden, you got to do it again because your leg wasn't in the right place when you were working off the ladder. Okay? And so now they take this evidence that you can't do the job back to the fire chief. And the fire chief get rid of that person based on that one incident after 4 hours of training. They waited until the females are exhausted. They'll wait until the last week of class to get you to mouth off. They will push you to the limit just so they can get that evidence. So they can take that evidence and report back to the chief to have you eliminated. They have to eliminate you before you get into the station, because once you get into the station, you're union protected up here. It was. You're union protected. So in order to eliminate you, they have to do it during a training academy. And that's what they do. But what you don't understand is that a lot of people, we give up everything. Okay, so because the academy is Monday through Friday, 8 to 6 or 8 to 5. So you can't have a second job. I was a teacher. And so you can't have a second job. You have to give up for that second month, everything. And so a lot of women come into the field. They're not 18 years of age out of high school. Most women that come into the fire service have at least one child that they're trying to take care of. And so we give all this up to come into training academy only to go 7 months to be eliminated. And the thing about it is, I keep telling our members and females, document, document, document. Because day one, when you come into the academy, they're documenting on what you do, your performance. You can do 1 million things right, and that one thing, they'll document and send it away. And that's what you'll be based on. It's one of those, it's just systemic. We promote the ones that look like us. We help the ones that look like us, from buddy to boss. I never had a buddy, so I don't understand what you're talking about. Okay, it's boss, and then the boss's friends. Not only that, a lot of people don't talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it. It's not just the white men that's eliminating them. It's the African-American men in the fire service as well. So we're going to keep this real. Let's keep it all the way real. Because when I came into the fire service, my black brothers were the ones that didn't accept me. I expected it from the white. I didn't expect it from my brothers. And so me coming in, they had just begun to be accepted in 99 when I hired in. They had just begun to be a part of the group, part of the crew, part of the IFF and all this. So when I came in, I was a triple negative. I was a woman in a male-dominated profession. I was an African-American, and I was a woman. So I got it on every end. And so if we talk about the good old boy network, a lot of people think about the good old white boy network. No, we got a black one too. Okay, so we got a black one too. So all I'm saying is that for the women, I need you to document, you can do this job. I've been here 22 years. So I am living proof that it can be done. You have that support through our organization. And I am very passionate about this. It can be done. We will fight for you. But you have to give us something. You have to document. Have to document. And don't get comfortable. And my black brothers out there, we need your support. I know I'm a female doing this job. And a lot of females that come in, they want to be men. I'm not trying to be no man. I'm not trying to be a man up in here. I'm trying to be a woman doing this job to provide for my children. I want my piece of the American pie. And this job has afforded me that. And I want others to have this opportunity as well.
So, Madam President, as far as what has the career done for you and your family? What have you been able to do or accomplish because of your career?
When I just said I wanted my piece of the American pie, okay, I've owned homes, cars. Most importantly, I was able to send my children to college. I was able to send my children to college, which was very important to me because I was a first generation college student. My mom and dad did not graduate high school. She went back after all six of us started school to get her high school diploma. So I'm a first generation college student. This job, 24 on, 48 off, not only allowed me to finish my education, but it allowed me the time and the resources to further my education and get my master's degree. 24 on, 48 off, 9 days a month. You can do whatever you want to do, but you have to want to do it. Don't get in this job and be, a lot of us get into the job and because I'm not the flavor of the month, because they're not messing with me, I'm not going to say anything. Okay? They're not messing with me. They mess with my sister or my brother. Well, it's not me, so I'm going to be quiet. They'll sit at the table and hear all of this and won't say anything. However, they'll buy into the fact that, hey, I need you to be a driver as opposed to an officer or a chief. They'll buy into that because they don't want the responsibility, because those guys were sent to get into your head to tell you that all we want you to do is on this level, don't go no further. When you start advancing, then that's when the issues start, the troubles start. Nobody wants to listen. No, make your money. This job has to be one of the best opportunities and well-kept secret that ever existed. In my city, we're on our second recruitment. We have individuals saying that, hey, I'll make more at Taco Bell. No, you don't. Because you got to put in your benefit package. So you got medical, vision, and dental. You start earlier with no certification, high school diploma, or GED, 18 years of age, and we sit you in a classroom for 7 months and give you everything you need. You, even after training, can leave and go somewhere else in the country and work. Except Florida and California, outside fires, we just don't do that. And so you're able to work we equipped you. And so once we equip you and you have the certifications to do the job, then we pay you what you're worth. It's more than putting the wet stuff on the red stuff. You have to be educated to know fire, to understand some fires I don't go into. Some fires we let burn. So EMS is a big component. We give you all that at 18. And so our community has bought into the fact that McDonald's, Taco Bell, and all these places pay more with no benefits. Now I got people from 2 and 3 hour drives away coming in to get these jobs because they know what this job can afford. They know. But my community don't know. And so my struggle is trying to, hey, look at me. Okay, if your biggest thing is cars, hey, I got this Mustang and I got a truck. If that's your thing. If your thing is house, I got a couple of you. Come see. What do I have to do to get your attention? I've sent my kids to college. Okay? Isn't it about providing for your family? Isn't that what this is about? And so I'm saying this right here will afford you that piece of the pie, of the American pie, that dream of home ownership. McDonald's can't give you that. Taco Bell won't give you that. After a minute, you don't want to smell no more tacos or McDonald's fries. You just don't want to do it. And so this opportunity, you're trying to let young African-American men and women know that this job is for you. Come on in. I will teach you how to do it. And if you have a training officer that won't teach you how to do it, oh, they're going to teach little Johnny over there. All I need you to do is listen. All I need you to just think and figure out, now, how can I do this? And if that doesn't work, give me a call. give some of the women in our organization a call. We'll tell you how we got through.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam President. I'm glad to see we had Brother Paul Washington out of FDNY. You talk about litigating and holding people accountable for their inactions and their actions. Brother Washington has been that person. Brother Washington, if you first and foremost, you introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here. Listening to all of this inspirational talk and educational talk. I'm a captain in FDNY. I've got 33 years on the job. I was a former president of the Balkan Society. When I became president, we took on a legal battle against the city, and we also used the media, and we used politicians. And the fourth thing we did was we ostracized the fire department from our events. We didn't invite them to anything. And through constantly doing those things, we were able to make some changes and get some more blacks coming into the fire department in New York. Our numbers are improving now. Our numbers have been going up since 2013. The fire department was forced to stop hiring for about 3 or 4 years. They couldn't hire anybody until they came out with a new list, et cetera. And that was in 2013. So since 2013, our percentages and numbers have been going up. We're only at now 8 or 9%, but we were at 3%, actually a little less than 3% when we started. It's been a long, hard battle, but I listened to Ms. Brooks earlier, and what she said really rang true to me. Our numbers are increasing now. We're under the judges, but we're under the judges' supervision. When that judge leaves, I'm so afraid that things are going to go back to how they were. And the only way that won't happen is if this younger generation takes the baton and runs with it. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. I'm not too encouraged, actually. And I can see us slipping back to 2 and 3% again. I can see it happening once the judge leaves the case. And that's kind of my biggest concern. And I can echo a lot of things that were already said. Madam President, a lot of the things you said about brothers, excuse me, our brothers not standing up when a sister comes into their firehouse and things of that nature. It's like we all going through the same struggle.
Another question. Thank you, Brother Washington. As far as your litigation in the city of New York, if you hadn't litigated, where do you think the department, as far as percentage, I see that your percentages have gone up, but without that litigation and forcing their hand to do right by our communities, where do you think we would be? And how important is litigating?
Litigating is very important. And we were at, like I said, less than 3%, but it wasn't just the litigation. Like I said, we had a relentless media campaign. Every chance we got, we were having press conferences, and we would show up to the graduation. When a class graduated, the cameras were always there. They always say, "Oh, New York City Fire Department graduated 200 candidates," and we would be standing out front saying, "Yeah, but how many of them are black? Out of those 200, there's two blacks. Out of those 200, there's one black." We did that over and over, and we were able to got it to everybody's attention that the New York City Fire Department was 3% black. People knew that because we hammered that home. We hammered that message home. So the media helped, and we went to every black politician in the city to get them to call the mayor, to write the mayor, to call the commissioner, write the commissioner, and say, "Listen, we need change." But we would have them request specific things. We need more money for recruitment. We need a better test. We need such and such. So and also, like I say, we ignored the fire. Not ignored them. We didn't invite them to any of our events. We didn't invite them to the dinner dance. We didn't invite them to the parades. Things like that. And because the fire department uses that to act like they have good relations with us. "I have good relations with the black firefighters. I just marched in their parade. I just did this or that or the other." So we ostracized them from those events. And because we wanted to create a feeling of we're at war here. And so all of those things helped. It wasn't just the litigation. I would say our numbers actually before the lawsuit was filed, our numbers had started going up, but it wouldn't be where it was today. And today ain't great. 8 or 9% is better than 2 and 3%, but it ain't where it should be. The city's about 25% black, you know. So, but without the litigation, there's still inroads that you can make. You know, you still can give them blows without litigation, but the litigation is very important. The litigation, I would say, was probably had the biggest impact. But the other things helped as well.
Thank you, Brother Washington. Mr. Rollins, you've been around for a while. You've been part of this plight and fight for a long time, and we thank you for that. As far as community service, lack of opportunity, the things that you've experienced through the last 20-something years pertaining to the fire service, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting to hear everyone speak about their journey. When the president, Clemens, talked about being the paper trail, that's what that's called, where they document everything you do, what they're doing is simply the same thing that's happening nowadays with gerrymandering. They change the rules and make sure that we cannot qualify or disqualify ourselves. Mr. Washington got on, I didn't know where he was from. But I remember that when 911, the unfortunate incident happened in the city, we looked at the newspaper where they actually showed most of the members of the fire department that had been lost. And the numbers were 3% minority. So you knew right then that they still had firm control over the fire departments in New York City. And if you look at that, that was a good way for all of us of color to understand how across the country, and particularly the major urban centers with the VAWUs, how they have dominated these departments to still control our cities. The other work that's very important, I've heard the comment made about how do we pass the baton down to the next generation, which is a concern that Mr. Captain Tenney has always made reference to. And when he started the academies in New Haven relative to getting into the urban schools and helping young men and young ladies see fire department as a future. And then more recently, how the fire department generically has said, well, let's take advantage of what Gary has put in place and take it over. There's always a contentious relationship between those in power and those who seek a quality of life. And I'm hearing the same thing over again across the country. It's so interesting. I guess there's no monopoly on racism or being misogynist, but it's just a recurring theme I'm hearing over and over again. I'm a data person. And I was looking at this morning, and it's a parallel department because Gary and I have talked about the fire department and the police department. And I'm wondering if they're the same numbers. New Haven is 64% African-American. So 64% black and brown. But it's 60% white police officers. So I'm wondering, does that same data hold true in New Haven that is predominantly non-minorities, and we're a minority within the actual fire department as we are in our police department?
Well, Mr. Rawlings, another thing I wanted to speak about is something that we experienced over the years, too, was the great relationships that our organization has done in the communities and what we do, some of the passions we have for, like sickle cell, for example. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, our community service work?
Yes. This is very interesting. When I was at a local hospital, I was a vice president for all our different services, et cetera. And when I retired one day, Mr. Penny, who likes to tackle people, he said, Jim, what about sickle cell disease? And I only knew it from the clinical side. I didn't know from the community side. Because just like, you know, if you're a hospital administrator, you know, you work 60 hours a week. It's a different world. You're always on call. So that was the first time I thought about it at all, about sickle cell in terms of the quality of life of the sickle cell community. And when Gary shared with me the fact that some members of the fire department who don't look like us, if you know sickle cell disease, you understand the kind of traumatic journey they go through, and always, very often, have to go to the emergency room at a level one trauma center. They're in crisis, full crisis. And you should know that also, that, and if you don't know this, that the most sickle cell clients and patients don't get past 40. You should know that they hate to go to the emergency room. But the point that Gary brought to me is many of these firemen who don't look like us don't even want to touch those patients, us. And out of that came, I got involved with sickle cell disease from a community side, and I built the first sickle cell community center 2 years ago. But the backbone for our sickle cell program has always been the firebirds. It's always been Gary Tinney and his team. It may not be that in other cities, but we wouldn't be where we're at right now if it wasn't for the firebirds. They're our backbone. And, you know, and whenever we have any event or fundraising, we always make sure, you know, they're always there, but we make sure that the community understands that if it wasn't for the firebirds, we wouldn't be where we stand right now with sickle cell disease, which is the only disease that we completely dominate.
And that being said, again, you know, when you talk about our organization nationally, these are the things we're doing locally. The Firebirds are a local chapter of our organization. But nationally, these are the programs, these are the things that we're part of. We play a major part of. Even though a lot of our initiatives aren't embraced, we continue to push our initiatives and to make sure that our community is taken care of. And again, if you see, we have folks from Flint, Florida, New York, all different parts of the country. And I wanted to go to Director Brooks on some of the phenomenal work they're doing there in Florida and throughout the Southeast region.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to say, Madam President, mentioned about the fire chiefs that look like us. Real quick with that. I think in the Southeast region, we do have the largest number of African-American fire chiefs that's in the Southeast region with the 9 states and District of Columbia. And to say that is that we do have a large number of African-Americans in the fire service, but we're very lacking in the with the females. So what we're doing is that in South Florida, we have two large organizations, Miami-Dade and Miami City of Miami, and Fort Lauderdale. Those are the three organizations that actually have summer camps for young kids, especially during the summer, in their last 2 years of high school, preparing them to come into the fire service. They also have officers that when the fire department is open, they actually will be able to apply. They also have a swim program because, as we all know, the African-American young kids did not have access to swimming. So what they did with the help of Representative Frederica and the Miami Dolphins, they have supported them with quite a bit of money, and they have a summer swim camp. Unfortunately, last year they didn't have it. This year they were able to proceed with that camp, and the number of lives are saved is phenomenal in that area. We are looking at other areas, especially here in Orlando. At least I'm now starting to get our commissioners involved to do that the same, because Florida has the largest number of young kids drowning. We have classes that we do for our members for upper mobility. The DMV, which is Maryland, D.C., Virginia, they actually have a program that they do once a year for assessment center. In the Southeast region, my goal when I became regional director in 2015 was upper mobility. Once we can get you in there, we need to get you promoted. We don't want you on the back of that fire truck. We don't want you just to be a driver, even though that's not bad. We need you to be an officer, and we need you to be prepared. now that we're preparing and that they're getting degrees, we have the largest number of African-American with, like Madam President said, bachelor's degree, master's degree, because we're pushing that. Now they're changing the game. So now we're looking at a different scenario. They're actually having officers do special training that they've never had to do before. And fortunately and unfortunately, they're not doing well either with it. So that may even change. I guess they didn't think that through, especially if you're sitting there 400 pounds behind a desk. So we actually looking at several aspects of getting our people around those obstacles that they're now starting to change. When you have African-American fire chief in a department who will knock down people that look like you, especially if they're more qualified than the white firefighters, that's a very sad case. And it really irritates me, and to the point where usually I'm in the fire chief's face. We have over 165 fire chiefs that we know of, and I can count maybe 10 out of that that's very productive, very dedicated, and will do the right thing. Is that not sad that we can use those numbers, especially in 1970? They wouldn't be in those positions if it wasn't for the International Association of Black Professional Firefighters. So now this is what we have to face. We're actually having to fight some of our own, which I don't have a problem with, Gary.
Thank you, Director Brooks. We have approximately about 10 more minutes left. So that being said, Brother Washington, you had made a comment talking about Ukraine. I'm finding that that's happening too. You got chiefs coming into departments and all the work that we've done in the community under the umbrella of our organization. It's being slowly, in some chapters, slowly taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, all the work that we put in, Mr. Rawlins, that we put in over the years pertaining to our community outreach and under the umbrella of the Firebirds, because under the umbrella of the Firebirds, a lot of times the department and the union, some of the union leadership didn't want no part of it. So we got used to doing things on our own. And we felt, like Madam President said, we knew if you embrace your community and you have great work ethic, they're going to back you. You can stand there and tell, you know, speak the truth and tell them what you don't like and what you like in the department. And when you go to bat with them, you'll have your community. You got to stand by your community, and you got to be proud of your brand. You got to be proud of our logo and what we stand for across this country. Don't let folks shame you into thinking that just because we're an African-American, black and brown organization, that we're angry and we're against everything. No, our priorities are pretty straightforward, and they're community, 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 an opportunity for the folks in our community to end up in the fire service. Remember, we used to have factories across the country. All those factories are gone. And now these fire and police and correction, all these opportunities are the new factories in our community. And we have to make sure in our community that we implement programs in the high school, but we got to hold the leaders accountable. If you have a department or you have a city that's not embracing your efforts, then something's wrong. You got to call them out on it. So that being said, we're just going to, I think we have 7 minutes left. We're going to start with Madam President on her, final thoughts on what initiatives, how we should hold some of our community leaders accountable, partnerships, and how to improve our presence in the fire service.
So it's very important on the local level that have this great relationship with your community, partnership, and members in your community. And so partnerships are so important simply because as a local representative, it could be a state representative, it could be a council member. Those council members have aspirations of going higher. So once you make that connection on the local level, you have a friend that may get up to House of Representatives, may get up to Washington, and those relationships are made on the local level. And so it's very important that we partner with organizations that have similar missions, like Upward Mobility, Black Equal Opportunity for African Americans, and community service, community relations. It's very important that we develop those partnerships. Mentoring programs. A lot of our chapters, and I thank Director Brooks, because we have a local camp here, recruitment of girls into the fire service and the guys into the fire service that we do every summer. Mentoring and just getting in the community so they can see a firefighter or someone in this profession that's so important that we show who we are so they can see who we need someone to look up to during this time. It's about more than just being in the fire service. It's giving little brown, little black boys and girls something, a career that they can be proud of. And it's so important. And for the ones into the fire service now, our chiefs and members in the fire service, don't forget the hand that helped you up. Don't forget the shoulders. Don't get up there and then be like them and us because you think you're accepted because you've reached a certain level. Don't forget shoulders that you get there, the local chapter that helped you get to where you are, that put in a word for it. Don't forget those. Another thing is about the fit test. Now they have, and Director Brooks hit on, different requirements or requirements, because they didn't know a secret. Black people go to college. We will get educated. We'll find a way to get those classes, and we're getting educated. So a lot of times when they hired in the fire service, it was the young white man. His dad was a firefighter. It was had nothing to do with education. And so now they're figuring out, oh my goodness, African Americans are educated. And so now they're seeing that, and now they're trying to figure out a way to squash that. And so all I just want to encourage anybody, join the fire service, Upward Mobility, so you can help the person come behind you. It's very important that we have someone on that level to reach that hand out and say, hey, you can do this. And I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And I'm going to show you how it can be done. And I know you don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to wrap that up. It can be done. You can do it. And we support you.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you for all the great work you've done. Beyond. Director Brooks.
All I'm saying is we need to get out there and vote. It's very important that we vote. And we don't just vote because they look good. We need to study the people that's running for those positions. And we need to make sure they understand our situation to get our votes. But we have to vote. We're in a situation now because on our local level, they didn't think it was necessary. They only voted for the president. Come on now. We need to get down and vote at the lowest level. Sheriffs, prosecutors, the whole thing. They make the fire chief's decisions. I'm just saying, voting is my passion. Let's get out there and vote. Teach our young people they need to vote.
Thank you,
Gary.
Thank you.
Passionately known.
All right, Mr. Collins.
I have a few things because often we can learn from other models. And I just want to go back to the fight we were involved in. You brought us into, Gary, with the paramedics. And it's through a partnership where the city of New Haven wanted to outsource paramedics to a commercial ambulance company. And since I had had experience at the major teaching hospital, I convinced the emergency room and emergency room director to testify opposed to it. So they collaborated with the sickle cell program with Gary's team, and we were able to reverse that entire process. That's an example of what can happen when you have partnerships. The other thing that I find exciting and you could learn from, Gary and anyone else, do you have the ability to bring a child? In the hospital world, we bring our children in to see what we're doing? Do we have that ability within the fire departments to show young people what we do, what you do in the fire department? I have not seen that. Maybe I missed it.
Yes, we do. But that was part of our, you know, the Public Safety Academy. That
right.
You had ride time, you had exposure.
Oh, great.
All these positions. But again, there's something that folks were against. And they despised the fact that you had these young folks from the New Haven community, some folks, not all of them, that were in these firehouses learning all these positions. And specifically, I'm thinking of a young female who's faring pretty well right now, graduated a few years ago. But that's the important. These are life-changing programs. And I think we got one more minute.
What's happening across the country with residency? I know that Gary fought for residency points because most of the individuals in New Haven don't live in New Haven. How is that going?
Well, what we can do is I'll bring in Brother Washington so he can chime in with our last 30 seconds and he could speak to that because their lawsuit and their efforts, you know, made a major change in who the folks were being hired from and where they were coming from, what city and states.
Yeah, just briefly, I just want to say one thing we should remember when we're fighting the fight is what we're fighting against is nothing compared to what our ancestors went through. You know, we remember their sacrifice and the greatness of them. You know, that should spur us on and inspire us to achieve even more. And with the residency, brother, maybe you can contact me directly. Of course, we've had a long fight in New York City, very intricate. Residency is it can be very useful, but there's a million ways that they have of getting around it. And I think we've come up with some pretty creative ways to keeping it, to making the residency legitimate, that people from outside the city can get those 5 points.
Okay. Thank you. I'd like to thank all our guests. Everybody, remember to put pressure on your community leaders to hire them.
Thank you.
That would be you, Gary.
Thank you.
God bless.
God bless. This is Harry Girls, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, New Haven.
Give up. Fall down. I just gotta get up. Yeah. 'Cause this is my road. Let's camera action. I'm ready to go. I'm never gonna give up. Fall down. I just gotta get up. Yeah.